You're listening to The Mumcast, the best weekly comic book podcast recorded in Southampton, England on Thursday nights. In our 237th episode, we talk about this week's comics, and in this week's Spotlight, James talks about Transmetropolitan one more time. Around the mic tonight are...
Hi, I'm James.
Hello, I'm Nick.
Bonjour, je m'appelle Jean-Claude.
But you're back, Jane, you're back. You're not Jean-Claude, though.
Back from La Rochelle.
That isn't French
for Jane. That was my undercover name.
Lover.
You're passing for a man.
Yeah.
Oh.
Really,
so I've got a series of questions to ask you. Where's the discotheque?
It's by Le Bonk.
Where is the swimming pool?
By Le Bonk.
Do I have to turn left or right?
By Le Bonk.
And the boulangerie is?
By Le Bonk.
And you are?
By Le Bonk.
Okay.
You're making me, for some reason, you're making me think of Mr. Nosey Bonk, the character from children's TV and My Nightmares.
Was he? If you don't know who that is, listener, you'll have to look him up. He was horrifying.
Mm.
He was the stuff of nightmares of a certain age group of man and lady. Do you think he was actually the Bonk deliberate? Was he meant to evoke the idea of someone who would stick their nose in your vagina?
Oh, do you mean what? was the nose phallic?
Was his name Nosey Bonk? Was the intention Bonk to be sexy Bonk?
Let's analyse this character a little bit. He appeared on television in the 1970s, on the BBC, and was specifically designed for children. I'd say yes, almost certainly, the nose was phallic.
Oh my goodness, it's just all wrong. It's all wrong. Everything that happened in the 1970s and 80s in pop culture and politics was all wrong.
What makes me so angry is, why can't the 1970s account for itself?
No, why?
Why can't the 1970s itself be brought to justice?
The second we nail the 1970s, we'll be able to use evidence from them. We'll flip them to get the 1980s into court.
Yeah.
And we'll bring the whole sorry mess down around its own arsehole. Mm.
But then I start to worry about, well, Jesus, what has the 90s got to answer for? And I was thinking the other day, well, surely at this point it's going to be ravers are going to start presenting at doctors, showing what the symptoms are of people who took too much ecstasy in their 20s. It's going to happen inevitably. It's going to happen in the next few years. So I'm looking forward to seeing what the long-term effects of ecstasy actually are.
90% of everything is rubbish.
Is that a quote?
Yes. Jane, you've been writing your book in France.
Yep.
Okay.
And then I had to pause writing my book to find out why all these people were coming back to life.
Okay, cool. James, what have you been doing the last week?
Oh, I don't
know. I'm keeping on two different computers here. It's very exciting.
It was a bank holiday, wasn't it? So let's see, what do we do? Oh, move the swing. That's not for this podcast.
I don't think that's specifically about kids.
All right, I moved the swing in the garden.
Is that literally everything you did this last week?
I did something else tonight. Went for a swim. That was nice. There was some other stuff. I can't remember right now. I've been suffering from sleep. Has been an issue for me.
Too much or too little?
No, too little. I keep...
Has nobody been trying to kill you in your dreams?
Maybe. Probably for editing issues. I keep waking up in the middle of the night, Nick. And Jane is bothering me. I keep waking up and I keep having about an hour, 2 hours of wakefulness in the middle of the night.
Uh-huh.
And it's not making me feel good at all.
Oh, man.
Other than that, everything's great.
How long's that been going on for?
Well, Doctor, a few weeks now.
A few weeks?
A few weeks now.
Really? You haven't mentioned this to me before?
No. No, it's the first time it's catching up with me a bit, to be honest with you.
The listener might have mistakenly got the impression that James and I share a bed, Morecambe and Wise style, but we don't. So I did not know he was having trouble with sleep, or no, Bert and Ernie style.
Once we have the sex, I make him go to his own bed.
In my own house.
Yeah. And I don't even call him a cab.
No, he calls me every other name under the sun, but it's okay because I ask him to.
Yeah, only during, though.
It's got a bit weird. I've just been apparently podcasting and stuff.
Oh, hold on. No, yeah, I did a load of podcasting.
Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, go on then. We went to Free Comic Book Day on Saturday. Jane was unfortunately incapacitated. A polar bear bit her leg.
Yeah, I know. Bastard polar bear.
Clean off.
Yeah, clean off. But he's grown back nicely.
Yeah, who knew? My limbs would just grow back.
Mm.
So not the sort of thing that you test out, is it?
No, but...
You only ever learn it by accident.
Enters into a whole new world of things now.
So Jane's got a healing factor, which is nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, we went to Forbidden Planet for their in Southampton for their Free Comic Book Day 2014 event and podcasted from there and met lots of lovely people. It was a scene, man.
It was really stressful. There were people there. Some of them just came over and talked at us. And some of them were really nice, but some of them were racist.
only one of them was mildly racist, and I think we could almost give him a pass.
He and his friend, they either needed to be cuddled more when they were growing up or they needed to be cuddled way less. That's what I reckon.
I've told you my theory. It might have been his awkwardness around 40-something men.
He assumed that we were racist.
He just looked at the shed and just assumed, well, they're 40-something. They must be racist. I'll try and assimilate by making some sort of mild, moderately xenophobic comments about people from the Middle Eastern region.
Do you think that he thought that Steve was just some young friend that we'd invited along to spout, like a young hip friend that had come along?
I'm afraid
that we were just going to interrupt his hipster talk with racism. Because young hip people aren't racist, that's what I believe.
I hate to break this and I feel bad because I know Life Partner Steve listens, but I think he probably looked at Life Partner Steve and thought Life Partner Steve was old too. He was of the age
where
anyone over the age of 24 probably looks quite old.
Yeah, maybe.
And I mean, Steve does look young and lithe and handsome, but...
Oh, yeah.
Literally everyone else who we saw that day was lovely. But that particular guy, somehow now I've decided that that's what any trench coat wearing so-and-so is like. Do you think, like...
I think you're being disproportionately hard on the poor boy.
Do you think that owning a long black trench coat makes someone want to shoot up their whole school? Or do you think that for some reason those people are drawn to black trench coats because... that they want to hide behind something?
Well, Nick, that's a real chicken and egg question. It's interesting, isn't it? I don't know. I think the coats probably make them. I think they're probably quite normal kids before they get the coats. And I think the coats seduce them and corrupt them. And I think there need to be a series of hearings where we make sure that trench coats are exposed and managed and maybe set some sort of code for trench coats to follow.
Should we consider that correlation does not necessarily imply causation, or just forget about that? Let's not worry about that.
I really liked it. I liked the fact that the scary ones with the buttons in their eyes. But apparently Coraline isn't the best of Neil Gaiman's books. But I love the movie.
Coraline isn't causation.
Yeah, I love the movie adaptation.
My mother-in-law just read American Gods and she really liked it. It's a good book. You should read it. I like it.
I am partway through it.
It's good. Do you mean you're partway through it, you started reading it years ago and then just gave up? Or you recently started reading it and you're loving it?
I recently started reading it. I'm enjoying it.
It's quite big, isn't it?
It is.
It's good, though. I like it.
A celebrity in my Twitter timeline tweeted a picture from a doctor's surgery the other day. I think it was Sarah Millican. Tweeted a picture from a doctor's surgery the other day saying, oh my God, if this is the reading material, can you imagine how long I'm going to have to wait? One of the things, I can't remember what the other book was. There were two books, but one was American Gods. And I wanted to tweet back and go, oh my God, your doctor's surgery is the coolest doctor's surgery in the world. It's got American Gods there.
Probably actually just some nerd left it there by mistake.
Might have been a nerd doctor. I mean, there's every chance a doctor's a nerd.
Maybe, although they are.
I know at least one nerd doctor, Nick.
They are the people who are most likely to have enough money to just leave like full length novels lying around instead of 7 year old magazines.
That's true. I got very uncomfortable with my hairdressers the other day. They've got Zoo. I don't feel comfortable sitting next to men waiting to get my hair cut while they're looking at pornography.
I think doctor surgeries might be the only place who still have subscriptions to Women's Realm and Reader's Digest.
Women's Realm.
And have you ever been on an aeroplane and tried to eat the airline food?
There was one house on my paper round.
This is new information.
That took,
how old were you?
It was the worst part of town as well. I'm 39. It was the
At the time.
Oh, 14. It was the worst part of town to do it in as well, because it was what I was delivering houses to the moneyed people. Mm-hmm. So it was
moneyed
people. It was all the Times and the Telegraph, big heavy paper. It was a nightmare on Saturday.
With extra reading material inside.
Yeah, but there was this one house that they had Women's Realm delivered to them. I did not care for the smell of that house.
No. Oh, patchouli oil?
Very lavendery.
Mm. Oh, probably just old.
Why were you in the house?
Oh, I wasn't. I was outside the house.
Smelling, oh, my God, through, you can smell it.
That's how strong the lavendery smell was. Yuck. I thought everyone had a bite around when they were 14.
No, not everyone.
I worked in a bakery.
And it was all digital by the time Jane was old enough to have a paper round.
You worked in a digital paper round, a digital bakery?
Yeah, digital bakeries are the
best.
You
know, like, that's how the Facebook cafe thing started off.
Nice. I've got your tray of cyber buns.
Yeah, like that.
He's like an improvisational genius. That was amazing.
Thank you.
I didn't do a paper round, but I was a Cub Scout. I did make tea for old ladies once a year.
Yeah, but you're not meant to get money for that on Bobber Job. I was a Boy Scout too. I did Bobber Job.
No, I did work in my parents' cafe. People used to put their cigarettes out in their their fry-ups.
Oh.
So it really wasn't very nice.
In the eggs.
Yeah, oh yeah, just always. Why is it always in the eggs?
Just ask for no egg. That's what I did. I went for breakfast with my family on Sunday because it's a nice thing to do, going out for breakfast. I like it. It's an affordable luxury. The three of us managed to eat breakfast. We had a lovely time. We were there for an hour and a half. Lovely time. A lovely filling meal that meant we only had to have something in the evening for less than £20. I'm telling you, that's the sort of value that I think we're really craving at the moment, Britain. That's the sort of thing that it might... Anyway.
You don't know where that meat came from, though, James.
A pig. It was bacon. And yeah, all right, the sausage was a bit eyelashy.
Was it religious? Was it religious bacon?
It was, yeah. It was kosher bacon.
Okay.
I forget my point, but it was a good one.
At some point, you were going to talk about how good or bad fried eggs are as ashtrays.
Oh, I don't like fried eggs. So what I said, can I swap my fried egg for a hash brown? They said, no problem at all. So what I had a hash brown. I like that. I don't like fried egg. It was brilliant.
I don't think,
and I don't smoke.
I don't think people used to put their cigarettes out in their fried eggs as a dirty protest. I think they just wanted to put their cigarette out.
I fucking hate eggs.
Excuse me.
And was the ashtray too far away?
I don't know what's wrong with people, Jane, to be honest. People used to, there was an ashtray on the table and a fry up, and some of them still put their cigarettes out on the floor.
Don't you remember?
Jesus.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Don't you remember, though, being a smoker, though? I'd quite often be smoking a fag thinking, God, I wish I had a delicious yellow yolk to stick this in. Wish I could spoil a potential life with my cigarette.
So I'm having a bit of a heebie-jeebie flashback now. That's not good. To my teens. So what were we talking about?
Heebie-jeebie, wasn't that the famous disco club in New York in the 70s?
No. Okay. What are we talking about?
Our weeks.
Thought bubble.
Oh.
No. Free comic book day.
Oh, yeah. Free comic book day. What happened there? So there was the guy who's probably going to... oh, God. I'm going to edit out all the stuff about him.
The perfectly
shooting
nice
up a school
young,
in case he actually does it.
The nice young man that was just trying to fit in.
Yeah, okay, whatever. I mean, maybe I was that guy once, but I a bit less racist. But now I have no sympathy or empathy for him. It was lovely, though, wasn't it? Free comic book day.
Yeah,
we had a lovely time. There were lots of lovely people there. We met lots of grown-ups and lots of children and lots of people in between. That was good, too. Life partner Steve was there. He was great. He wrote notes, though. That was weird.
He did very well. I particularly enjoyed listening. I enjoyed listening to his... Donald Duck comic review. I enjoyed it even more listening back because I was fully concentrated. That was a wonderfully comprehensive review of a really complicated
It was
tale.
A pretty great comic.
Yeah, it was awesome.
The art
I really
was lovely
it.
And I like that a lot, actually. He was very excited about it before we even started recording. He'd been flicking through it. Did anything else happen? Oh, we did a competition. The now customary...
Excuse me, I did a little burp. I probably shouldn't have drawn attention to that name.
The now customary Mom Free Comic Book Day draw. We've got two full... We say they're full. I don't know if they're actually full sets of Free Comic Book Day. I don't know if it's possible to have a full set of Free Comic Book Day comics.
I don't think
but
it
they're
works
quite,
like that.
There's quite a lot. It's something like 47 comics in each bundle.
The second one definitely isn't a full one because I took the Hello Kitty book for my daughter.
I was going to brush over that.
Okay.
So there is a competition to win either the full batch or one of a, like, assortment of the little batches. We'll split the second lot into some little batches. The competition, you'll have to listen to the Free Comic Book Day special to... Unless you want to... Should we tell people what the competition is? Because they shouldn't have to listen to like 2.5 hours or however long that was.
Do you want me to?
Because I can't remember.
Okay, so on the... pure coincidence and not a brilliant piece of marketing. On the same day... Or the Wednesday before Free Comic Book Day, so it was current that week, Marvel released Amazing Spider-Man number one. See, obviously sees the return of Peter Parker.
Volume 7 or something like that.
Which obviously sees the return of Peter Parker to the spider suit. So instead of asking you, as we have done in the past, how many books altogether Forbidden Planet sold that day, we want to know very specifically how many Amazing Spider-Man's number one, Volume 7... did they sell? And we also told you that it's less than 100 and more than 10.
Was that on the day of release or from...
On Free Comic Book Day.
Actually, so on Free Comic Book
Day. On Free Comic Book Day, because obviously Free Comic Book Day is all about supporting retailers and hopefully boost sales. So how many copies of Amazing Spider-Man, number one, volume 7, did they sell in Forbidden Planet Southampton on Free Comic Book Day 2014?
It's under 100,
but more than
over 10. So you need to you need to put your email us at
momcast@gmail.com
with your number. Don't tell us it on Twitter or Facebook or anywhere like that, because that'd be stupid because everyone will be able to see it.
And just saying, but in previous years, you know, if you enter, you've got a good chance of winning something.
Yeah. Only thing is that obviously because of the way we're doing it this year, there is only space for 89 people to enter. So you'd better get your entry in as quickly as possible.
Cripes.
That's
really,
what she said.
Really didn't think that through.
No. So, if literally everybody who listens to the podcast enters, we should be okay. But if extra people... about 20 or 30 extra people decide to enter, then we might be in trouble.
Do you think that makes listener feel like they're part of an exclusive club?
I think so, I hope so.
Or feel like they're listening to...
exclusive club that's free to join.
A loser podcast. I mean, I don't
There's no
know.
Such thing.
Are there any international shipping restrictions on the competition?
None more international shipping restrictions.
Unless you're Ryan K. Lindsay.
Yeah. Has Ryan ever won?
Yeah.
I think Australia's allowed to win.
Yeah, go on. Wherever you are in the world, we want to post free stuff to you.
Well, I mean, we'd rather just hand it to someone. But if that doesn't happen...
Yeah. If you live in Southampton, we super encourage you to do it. But
yeah, and as people aren't going to be entering on Twitter or whatever, no one's going to know what number you gave. So basically, we'll probably just lie about the most handy person to hand the comics to.
Yeah.
What their entry... Did I say all that out loud?
Yeah.
We won't do that.
James,
normal terms and conditions do apply, et cetera, et cetera.
That's true.
James, as this is relevant to Spider-Man, will you be drawing pictures of Spider-Man for the winners?
Only if you ask in your email for a picture of Spider-Man.
That's not how you say it.
You guys are lucky guys, because if you ask in your email for a Spider-Man, I'm going to draw you funny guys as Spider-Man.
That's perfect. That's brilliant. And he's getting really good at drawing them.
No, I'm not.
He's not. He's not. They're still really bad.
Yeah.
Basically, when James draws it, you know, when someone does a self-portrait, not everyone's a good drawer or anything, but when someone's asked to do a self-portrait of themselves, you can apparently psychologically tell, and if you ask kids, you can psychologically tell what that person's self-image is like when they draw a self-portrait. Basically, whenever James draws a man, I'm not sure what this says, but whenever James draws a man, it's always a little, it's kind of scratchy. The lion is very nervous and it's just like a little fuzzy. You have to like look really, really closely to make out two slightly rubbishy limb arms and two slightly rubbishy legs and big eyes and ears, but no mouth. And when he draws women, well, he can't. Because he starts screaming whenever you ask him to. I don't know what that says about him. Probably nothing.
James has drawn me two pictures of superheroes. He drew me Spider-Man.
Was he tiny?
No, I thought it was the Thing.
All right, okay.
And he drew me Captain America, and I thought it was Super Ted.
Oh.
That was a golden age Captain America, and he was brilliant.
That's you must have brought him a little bit out of his shell. He normally gets very freaked out when asked to draw men of any kind.
Well, he didn't draw a man, he drew a bear. So I think that says even more, really, doesn't it?
Did the bear have a penis?
I don't remember.
It was all penis.
You're all penis. Yeah. We're going to talk about...
Is that Sade's follow-up, The Wall Woman?
Yeah, you're all penis. When we're not talking about Sade, which seems to come up quite regularly...
Sade?
Not Shorty. We
Is that what I say?
Yeah, we talk about comics. We'll be doing that in a minute. You can talk to us about comics on Twitter. We've got Mom Comics on Twitter. We've also Jane's on Twitter at
Jane Mom.
James is on Twitter at
Charlton Heston Mom.
James Mom. I'm on Twitter at Nick Sight, NIXSIGHT. And Rob Leafield is on Twitter at...
Rob Momb.
And John Momb is also on Twitter. He's as John Momb, although he should start calling himself Southampton Comic Club Momb.
Yeah.
John, really.
Ooh, yeah.
As he was amazing at... He did... Because basically, John's comes across as quite nervy sometimes. And we were watching him giving away free comics on Free Comic Book Day over on his own table giving away comics. And he was like a force of nature. Wasn't he, James?
He's fueled entirely by hate, you know that.
He had his own table.
Yeah, I know. That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what freaks me out?
He only came over to talk to us when...
It relates to what...
Is it because he's Comic Club VIP?
Yeah.
It relates to what I'm going to talk about later, but he is fueled by hate and cigarettes.
The Comic Book Club guys, Ash was there drawing and stuff. That was pretty... He was really good. And
interviews well.
Yes, he does. And John Higgins. John Higgins probably interviews well. We don't know because we were too nervous and confused to even think to ask.
I should have been there. When I heard the story, I knew I should have been there.
Because you would have talked to him?
Yeah.
I mean, we talked to him. We just didn't talk to him.
He was very busy.
Yeah. So Twitter, that's where we all are on Twitter. We're also on Facebook and on Google+ and on Tumblr. You can find us on any of those places. You can find the addresses for all of those places, I think, still in the top right of the website. The website is...
momcomics.com.
And you can listen to all of our previous episodes as well as seeing full show notes for all of the episodes and everything at that site or on your podcatcher of choice. If you are listening to this on iTunes or Pocket Casts or any other podcatcher, please do review and rate and review. Please do rate and review. That would be nice. It makes us feel good. You can also send us emails telling us how lovely or not you think we are. And eventually... we will probably reply. We're not very good at checking, but if you want to send us emails, you can send them to...
momcast@gmail.com.
And you can also send 2 to 5 minute audio contributions about comics, just any comics you think we're not talking about or anything in comics that you think we're not talking about. It's all good. You know what I want someone to do? And I want them to kind of do this. I think originally this was kind of one of the reasons why I thought we should do contributions. Is there's a podcast I listen to where they've got a... certainly they're used to it. It's about video games, and they used to have this angry poet man they knew who would write game-themed write and perform game-themed poems that were like a couple of minutes long, and he'd send those in as contributions. I would like somebody to do comic-themed angry poems and send those in.
Well, David,
and songs, but that's a
David
whole different thing.
David made a wind at us a poem once, didn't he?
He does that stuff, sometimes when he's got time, but he's very busy.
He is busy. I wouldn't want to impinge upon his time.
Happy birthday to Amanda, by the way.
Yes. Well,
that was today, wasn't it?
It is today.
Yes.
Well, it'll be yesterday by the time.
Well, it's only strictly speaking the next day once you've gone to sleep. So at least David will probably still be hearing it.
That's
anyway,
true.
Shall we talk about this week's comics?
Yeah, go on then.
Oh, Jane's got one that I've got. That's awesome. I can take that out of my comics.
Do you want to go first, Nick?
Yes, I will. 2000 AD, Prog 1880. When do you suppose that was made, James?
2014 is my guess, but I don't know. Am I right? I don't know.
All of the work done on 2000 AD Prog 1880 was done in the year 1880 and sent forward in time to us. I was a little bit cynical a couple of weeks ago about the fact that John Wagner had said, I think, that he wasn't going to be doing any more Dread and is back doing Dread. But the first story that he did was really good. This current story that he's doing with John McCrae is brilliant. The art is amazing, but the pacing of it is really great. It's about spree killers, but it's a very mega city one take on spree killers. I'm sure we've had spree killers in this world before, but this is quite intense.
How do you go on a spree in a tent?
I don't know, but they manage it. They're going to go on a spree anywhere. But the way
it's all, I could imagine. But
the way it's all pulling together is because sometimes John Wagner stories are really super wacky, but the last two have been quite poised and obviously quite politically charged. This one in particular, though, it's a top-notch cop thriller. I've written top-notch cop thriller, psycho killer, race against time, because I'm desperate to be included on a tagline on something, but I don't think 2000 AD really do them. Let's try that again. Top-notch cop thriller. It's a psycho killer race against time.
You didn't sound like you mean it.
I do, though. I know I don't. I don't sound sincere. That's just the nature of my voice. I sound a bit nasal and a bit like Marvin the Paranoid Android.
Once again, we're failing, Marvin. Come on.
I can't help that, though. Indigo Prime returns in this issue. I love Indigo Prime. It's still written by John Smith. It's still super weird. There's a whole bunch of stuff happening in an alternate universe where the Nazis clearly won World War II. The artist on this, though, it's an odd fit for it. It's Lee Carter, who I know James really likes, who does this really beautifully rendered but quite sort of realistic-looking art. So it's quite a weird fit for this, but I'm enjoying it so far. I do like looking at their art. I had a sudden, I don't know if you noticed, but I had a sudden flash there where I thought, it has never occurred to me before, but Lee could be a lady's name.
I think
I don't know if Lee Carter's a L-E-E.
Oh, no, L-E-E is usually traditionally male way of spelling it.
It is, okay. But what about L-E-I-G-H?
That's traditionally a female way of spelling it, but I know some men do as well.
Some of the most manly men do.
Oh, yeah.
Most beautiful men.
The most beautiful men.
And I had
comics.
A childhood friend who was Lee, L-E-A, and he was a boy.
That's
and
weird.
And now he's a man.
His parents were clearly very confused.
Well,
is Minnie Driver her real name?
No, she's sponsored by BMW.
Okay. But anyway, so it's beautifully rendered, and it starts, as all John Smith comics should start, with a slightly controversial and grossly graphically violent scene of the crucifixion of Christ. And it's just kind of an aside in the story. It's not even, like, a big deal in there. And also, there's a reference to a character who is just completely off-panel called Osama bin Obama. He's a supervillain in it, quite weird.
That's wonderful.
Slane has good monsters this issue, despite being Slane. And there's a new Thargs Three Rillers.
Oh.
I know the name is awful, but it's called Colony. It's the first part. And it's set in Siberian. It's in a work camp in Siberia in 1957. But it's kind of got this, they find an astronaut or a cosmonaut. But they're in this really decrepit, crappy Siberian work camp. And people start going a bit crazy. It's a bit like The Thing, the movie. It's cool. And it's written by Keck W., who is sometimes pretty good, but with art by Vince Locke, who was, I think, an early... I think did some art on Sandman, but is one of my favourites from way back, from Caliber Press Books. So, Caliban number 2, which I talked about the first issue of, I picked this up. It's an Avatar book. I picked up the first issue a couple of weeks after it had come out because I just saw it and it caught my eye and I didn't have anything to buy that week. And it's really good. It's written by Garth Ennis. It's one of my favourite things that Garth Ennis has done in years, actually. And it's got art by a gentleman called Facundo Percio. Very clean, clear art. It's the first issue was really good and set up this really brooding tone. The second issue continues to be great. It's all the elements of a perfect deep space haunted house horror. As I mentioned in my review of the first issue, it's about this deep space mining ship, straight out of Alien, really, that is in hyperspace and jolts out of hyperspace. They notice that all of the people in deep sleep are being vented out into space from a crack in the side of the ship. And then on further inspection, they realize that somehow, in a way that they're pretty sure isn't supposed to happen, this is in a universe where they haven't met extraterrestrials. They, as far as they know, humans are the only people in the in the galaxy or universe or whatever. In reality, I don't know. They find that they are now occupying the same space as this giant alien vessel. And when I say occupying the same space, some of the people are occupying the same space as the alien vessel as well, and so are dead. There's lots of great imagery with people like half melted into...
All right, so they're existing in the same space at the same time.
Ooh. Yeah, it's pretty creepy. There's an excellent sequence in this one where two of the characters are trying to find their way back to where some of the other people are. And it's really pretty cool because it looks like the main characters... I know that deep space horror with a female protagonist isn't that weird. It's kind of a prototype that's been established since Alien. But the two main characters you spend most of the time with in this are actually two very different female characters. One's very practical and direct, and the other one's just, I think, is probably higher ranking and just flaky as, like, hell. Because this is a terrifying situation. Yeah. One of them's handling it better than the other one is. But there's a sequence in this that actually made me feel, like, a little bit vertiginous, a little bit dizzy. And it's funny that it did, really, because they're trying to get back to their colleagues. And one of them's kind of looking at a section, and they're just going through one cabin after another. And one of them's looking at this section of wall and says, don't freak out, but I think we're on the outside of our ship because of the way that the ships have, like, joined up. And one of the characters just completely freaks out because, of course, one of the things that happens when you're traveling in deep space is you get really used to the idea that you're not supposed to be on the outside of your ship.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It's really good. I mean, I don't know if ultimately there's a sort of a Lovecraftian feeling to it, and I don't know if ultimately it's going to do anything much different from Event Horizon or Alien, but I'm quite happy to see this sort of story in a comic. And the art's really nice and atmospheric, and when it's got creatures, they're pretty gross, and it's cool. I really like it. I also picked up The Woods, number 1. It's a comic from Boom Studios. I didn't know anything about this. It's got quite a nice cover. I think the covers are... I think I got a variant cover by Paul Duffield. It is $3.99, which is weird for an untested book, but it was an intriguing premise. It's written by James Tynion, the 4th? Mm-hmm. IV is 4th, isn't it?
Yeah.
I should really be ashamed that I didn't know that. But it's written by James Tynion, the 4th, with art by Michael Dialinas. Sounds like a Greek name. Don't know, though. And colours by Yozan Gonzalez. And it's a really, really weird premise, except it kind of isn't that weird a premise. It starts out with us seeing this kind of nerdy guy looking at this weird, almost Aztec-style artifact. And then you get this flash of four different... completely different cultures, like a Roman centurion, an Australian Aborigine, and I guess an Aztec guy looking at it in the exact same position as him. And then he says, I know exactly what I have to do. This is the first page. And then it cuts to 25 minutes earlier, and it's set in a prep school, a prep high school in Milwaukee. And what you get is you get introduced to all of these different characters, all of the different high school archetype style characters, a good mix of girls and boys and nerds and sort of lunatic jock types and obviously rich kids. And it starts setting up to be like a high school drama. And it's all going kind of on those sorts of rails. But the characterization of all of the characters is really, really good. The art by Michael Dowlinas is really clear. It's quite stylized, but it's quite stylized and the line's really bold on it. But it's pretty clear and the storytelling's really good. And it feels authentically like teenagers talking. And then suddenly something happens. And it's unclear what, like the alarm starts going or something. And they look outside and realize that their whole school building is suddenly in the middle of this completely alien landscape. In this case, it's the woods of the title, I think. Some of them panic. Some of them feel that they immediately know what to do. Some of them go exploring. Some of them don't. The teachers kind of think they're in charge, but you don't really see them. You only really see one teacher, and then the teachers are apparently closeted off trying to make decisions for everyone else. And a plan sort of forms, and people are going to try and do stuff. And it's a really intriguing first issue. Oh, and there are monsters. These creatures start turning up and doing violence.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's really weird. And there's a suggestion that they're in. There's a suggestion of where they might be, but nobody really knows. Now, what's slightly weird about it is not that long ago I read the first several volumes of this manga series from, I think, the 1960s. It's really old-fashioned drawn black-and-white manga comic called The Drifting Classroom, the premise of which is almost identical to this. It's about it sets the scene as all of these kids in a Japanese high school that suddenly gets sent to this place, and you're not sure where it is. It might be in the far future. It might not. The environment is completely hostile. It's a slightly different environment, but it's a really similar premise in the way the scene sets really similar. I don't know though if the creators of this are aware of that series. It's just really difficult for me to ignore the similarities. But what's funny is you see the different ways that these are paced. I know that Japanese comics are probably quite different in the way they're paced now from the way they were then. But that I read something like 8 or 9 volumes of it, and they still weren't really any closer to working out what had happened. Whereas this, things start ticking along much more quickly because it's an American comic and everything has to happen really quickly. It's pretty good, though. Really, really worth having a look. Look it up. It's called The Woods, and it's from Boom Studios.
Action Comics.
What?
James Tynan IV was writing some backups in Morrison's run on
Oh, that's where Action I know the Comics. Name from. You liked them, didn't you?
Yeah, good.
You really liked them.
I think he did the one. Was it the one about the girl that had evoked a demon, and they were Batman and Superman were trying to help her. It was a really creepy, weird story.
Ooh, I don't remember that, but okay. Anyway, the other book I got that I was going to talk about was Nailbiter, #1, but Jane got that as well.
I did, yeah.
So I want to know what Jane thinks.
Jane liked it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Nailbiter, issue #1 from Image Comics at $2.99, and it's story by Joshua Williamson and art by Mike Henderson, not Mark, mm-hmm. Mike Henderson. It's a good old... It reminded me a little bit of Sweets, where they're trying to find us, where they were trying to find the serial killer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because it's going back to that serial killer. We haven't had a serial... Well, I haven't read a serial killer book in a little while like this. I don't know if it's going to be supernatural or not. It seems quite sort of straight so far, but it sets off with, you know, the character framing. You've got a cop who's been suspended and his friends calling him for help because he's gone to this town and he thinks he's found out why this town is so notorious for churning out serial killers. Mm-hmm. So he goes obviously to find out what, you know, to help his friend because he's the only person he can trust. quite a nice scene setter. You meet some not very nice characters. You meet some nice people too, and you learn like how heinous this place actually is. Something like, I think it's quoted 16 out of the top serial killers
in the US.
The US were born in this. Were born in this town. And Nailbiter is actually the latest serial killer to come out of that town, who's actually been released back and is living there. So, yeah, strange premise, lots of serial killers. So they're trying to figure out if there's a connection.
Yeah, Nailbiter's weird. I didn't really understand his pathology because he finds... It's set up in the first couple of pages, isn't it? He finds people who... bite their nails.
That's his preferred
victims.
Is it MO they call it? So he likes people that bite their nails. I'm so glad I stopped biting my nails.
But then he makes them grow their nails again, and then bites
their hands and everything else, and basically a strange variation of cannibalism. Yeah. So I'm hoping that we get like a little profile of each serial killer as the story goes on, because there's quite a few. I'm sure we will as we try to find out what the connections are. But the art is so gorgeous.
It's really nice.
It's really, really nice. And obviously beautifully coloured as well. I forgot to mention the colourist, who is Adam Guzowski.
Mm-hmm. I don't know the name, but it's really atmospheric.
Really. It reminded me a lot of American Vampire, just a bit of Raphael Albuquerque style art.
Hot dog.
And obviously similar colouring as well, but no, it's really good. Nice and gory as well, kind of what you want from a serial killer book.
Yeah, it's the town's called Buckaroo, which I quite love, because they're called the Buckaroo Butchers. It's interesting. I really, really enjoyed it, but it's much more of a high concept sort of pitch than anything else. The idea of 16 serial killers all from one place and they all kind of have their gimmick and stuff. It's more like The Following than a proper serious psychological thriller, but it's
all right.
But it's still pretty cool.
Do you mean the program?
Which is like, in that it's very much serial killing is very much a thing that people decide to do because they're just a bit like, they think it'll be cool or something.
Oh, I didn't... You get the sense that this town isn't quite what it seems, and there's something root cause there. A bit like, you know, with in the first couple of seasons of Buffy, when you've got the... what do you call it?
Hellmouth?
Yeah, that kind of thing.
There's clearly something weird going
something
on.
Something like that, I feel, would be... It might be. I don't want it to be too supernatural, because serial killers on their own are just really, really terrifying. Yeah. And also the concept of someone kidnapping you just because you do a habit like biting your nails. It could be anything, you know. That bit's quite nice and creepy.
It's one of the only ones we haven't... Yeah, it's like they've found something really mundane that'll creep people out properly.
Yeah, you know, like... girls with long hair being abducted and things like that. It's
a theme, isn't it? Yeah. And lots of the serial killers that are mentioned in this one seem to have creepy masks, like that are just sacks over their heads with faces drawn on. There's that sort of thread going through it. So it's clearly like amping up that particular sort of tension or whatever.
But I don't know if this book was recommended to me in the shop, but. The cover is very striking as well. It's unusually gory for a comic book cover, especially from Image. So that was also, I was like, well, if they're getting straight into it, let's see what it's about.
One of the, we've got the Mike Henderson Direct Market cover. There's one that's a lot more chilled out by Wes Craig, but there's a Charlie Adlard cover which literally has a hand completely, like, almost disintegrated on it.
Yeah.
Speaking of... Wow, that's awkward middle bit stuff. I'll remind me, speaking of mutilated hands.
Okay.
But, I liked it. I get the feeling almost more than The Woods, this seems like it's not going to be long before this gets picked up by either a TV company or a movie company.
Yeah.
It's that sort of a...
It is. It doesn't feel like
sort
a
of
pitch,
an idea.
But it's an idea that will translate very
really well.
Well
to TV.
Yeah.
TV series love serial killers.
Which is good, because I like watching TV series about serial killers.
I like watching TV series about people
baking.
Who take like myths and they test them.
You seem to really love Mythbusters. This is the
I'm binging on it at the moment. I'm locked into it.
Shouldn't binge. Moderation. Everything in moderation, otherwise you'll get addicted.
Yeah, that's how I live my life, Nick.
Well, it's how you're learning to live your life.
Yeah, that's true. My life's so empty now, Nick.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you, Nick.
It's a good comic, wasn't it? I liked it. Awkward middle bit.
It's so Rob Liefeld.
No.
Talking of mutilated digits, Bill Finger.
Yes. Yes.
Is that where you were
going?
What
about Bill Finger?
I noticed recently, I don't know if it's a thing, I've not really been that, but I've noticed several creators talking about Bill Finger a lot this week. There seems to be from time to time, a push to get him more permanent recognition as a co-creator. Mm-hmm. Of Batman, which I think is only fair and right. Obviously, the designs that he created 75-odd years ago still resonate today, still very much used today. So,
Batcar. Robin.
Yeah, the cow, the Batgun that he used to use early on.
The Joker, was he a Bill Finger?
I think the Joker was a Bill Finger. I think all of
the good stuff.
Core, like the Riddler and all of that, like the core... oh my goodness!
I saw it.
Rogue's Gallery is the phrase I was. You can edit that together to sound like I wasn't fishing for the phrase Rogue's Gallery.
Somebody, was it Ty Templeton or somebody, did a short strip that was done in that old style and suggested it was basically, if Bill Finger hadn't been involved in Batman, this is what it'd be like, and it was just about some guy solving crimes.
Yeah,
in a bat.
Yeah.
Outfit. He had a bat hat.
Yeah.
Or something.
Bob Kane had the idea, but Bill Finger brought the call.
They should definitely finger... Oh, never mind.
No.
Can't think of anything.
No.
I think in terms of recognition, as long as we all, as comic book fans, as long as we always talk about him and we always remember him, it doesn't matter whether DC... I mean, it'd be nice if they did, but it doesn't matter whether it's... That DC always give the credit, Bob Kane and Bill Finger. As long as we all talk about him,
we should force DC to take the finger. No, that doesn't work either. No. I think, wasn't it more Bob Kane than DC that kind of messed with the credit of it a little bit? I don't know.
I'm not gonna comment because I don't know enough about it.
The impression one gets of the early years of mainstream American comics is that there was a lot of pretty sketchy guys involved. I don't know, but I wouldn't like to cast aspersions.
Do you think in 75 years people will be having the same conversations about digital rights management?
Maybe.
How are they doing that? It's just insane.
But actual gangsters and stuff. I mean,
I'm not saying there's gangsters involved in iTunes.
No, but I think there were probably actually organized crime was probably involved in the mainstream New York comic scene at the time.
The Momcast cannot endorse that view. Nick's views are his and his alone.
I read at Free Comic Book Day, and I did talk about it a little bit on the special, which you can find at the website. It's really long, but it's probably quite good.
What, the website?
No, the free comic book.
I listened back
special.
To it. I thought it was really good.
Okay, but you like the sound of your own voice. That's one of the things about you that's famous and everybody knows. You aren't insecure at all. But I read a comic that was about the seduction of the innocent and William Gaines and...
Go Bill Gaines.
What's his name? Wortham.
Yeah, that's
Wortham's Originals. Yeah. The man who made the little sweets and also did the seduction of the innocent thing.
You
and
could
it's
actually
fascinating.
Argue that maybe his sweets did more to seduce innocents than comics.
Yeah, he was really interesting, and it's worth looking up more about him.
I enjoyed hearing about him and the fact that he was a more three-dimensional character than we like to believe.
Yeah, I tried to tell the story to my wife Amy at dinner a couple of nights later. She wasn't as gripped, but... I thought she'd like it because she teaches psychology and he was a psychologist, but...
Yeah, but she's off the clock, mate.
No, that's true. She was off the clock.
Yeah, right. She married you, mate. She never quits.
No, that's true. What we do is whenever we spend any time around any of our family or friends, I test her. I say, so what's he? What's she? What are they then? How does that couple work? What's going on there? So what do you think your dad's dysfunction is then? And she has to answer in 5 seconds. Otherwise, I make her life really difficult.
Wow. Should we ask her how to rate that then?
She does some of her best work on me.
Hey. Hence Noah.
That's the other podcast. Don't bring him up on this.
Don't
podcast.
Mention him here.
The thing about hands, about mutilated hands.
Oh yeah, what about mutilated hands, Nick?
Not mutilated hands. Who was? It sounds like a Garth Ennis character in something, doesn't he?
It does. It sounds like a German who's had a very difficult incident with some heavy industrial machinery.
Yes, but not him. This is the advert for the death of Wolverine, which, I mean, it's Wolverine. Marvel are promoting a series called The Death of Wolverine, where he actually apparently is going to die, but, you know, probably not for long.
Fit in with Old Man Logan?
I don't think it does, but let's not be continuity nerds. But the thing that really struck me about it is the promo image. It's a really, really nice series of images by, I think it's Steve McNiven is the series artist, and he's a pretty good artist. But I think they're the covers for the comics, are basically Wolverine with his claws, Wolverine's fist with his claws raised, just his claws.
Snicked.
And then each next image is a progression of basically one of his claws, like, just snaps, and it's really beautifully cleanly rendered. One of his claws just snaps, and there's a little bit of wear and blood and gore on one of his knuckles, and then just slowly his hand and claws disintegrate in this sequence of images. And I was looking at it thinking,
that's incredible.
That's a bit fucking harsh. It looks really pretty, but it's a bit graphic and violent and nasty. So when you mention the image cover that's a bit gory, it just kind of made me think of it. I don't know. It's almost like they're not for kids. Well, comics aren't for kids anymore. Bam, pow.
I have to say, though, my nephews really enjoy it. It sounds like it was a bit of an awakening for my 10-year-old nephew, 11-year-old nephew.
Oh, the free comic book day.
Sounds like it was a real eye-opener for him. I think he's... apparently he's quoted as saying, "Mum, can we come here every Saturday?"
How did she feel about that?
Not comfortable, but that was really good.
You could take him.
I don't go there every Saturday either.
You could take him to the library. That's almost as good.
I've got a child of my own, really, so I'm sort of quite happy with parenting them.
There's a...
You turned into a big sarcastic chicken.
I can't remember what I was going to say. It was about Free Comic Book Day. Oh, it'll come to me. Did either of you see the Gotham trailer?
No.
All right, see, I didn't either. The internet seems to be forming a pretty good opinion of what that series is going to be like based on a really short trailer, though.
Oh, the Gotham Central TV series.
Well, it's not Gotham Central.
Isn't it? I thought it was based on Gotham Central.
No, we all did, kind of. It's about Jim Gordon's early days in Gotham.
All right.
And there's a little kid playing Batman who's... Bruce Wayne, who has recently been orphaned. Oh, right. Catwoman's in it, but Selina Kyle's in it. Sorry, she's just a little kid. The Penguin's in it. It seems like possibly that premise, the premise of it being Gotham Central, has kind of been put to one side a little bit.
Sounds a little bit more like a kind of year one Gordon sort of side of year one, although obviously Batman is going on his early... escapades in that rather than...
I think it's like Smallville for Commissioner Gordon rather than for Batman.
Yeah, but that makes sense. But Gotham Central proved that, you know, you can tell stories in the shadow of the Bat. There's an idea for a series, DC. And still make it entertaining. So we'll see. It might be really good. Gotham's a very interesting playground for stories.
It's not really a playground.
Or not one that you'd want children to go into.
One of the people I follow on Twitter was asking the question today. They have a young boy, I can't remember if it's their child or a nephew or something, who is currently, he's about 6 or 7 or something like that. He is currently reading Tintin and Asterix.
Good work.
And she's thinking of stopping him reading those for now because there are certain things in some of them that are quite difficult to explain, I think. And she was, I'm talking about some of the representation of race and other nationalities and stuff. More Tintin than Asterix.
No, Asterix in some ways is worse.
Yeah, in some ways. It's complicated.
Well, remember, the lookout of the pirates.
Yeah.
He's a black character with massive red lips.
True. But what struck me as quite odd, maybe because I was tired and I was at work and a bit confused and stuff, but she asked what people would recommend to a young boy, what comics people would recommend to a young boy. And it feels like something that we've almost been training ourselves over the 236 episodes before this one to be able to answer. But I almost completely drew a blank.
Did you say Tintin and Asterix?
No, it wasn't. That would have been, I don't think I want him to read Tintin and Asterix anymore. Oh, maybe you could try him with Tintin and Asterix. Yeah, that's how I normally answer questions.
Luke Pearson's Hilda series?
I suggested that, yes. I also suggested some of the more kid-oriented James Kochalka books. They might be a bit young, though, but I really do love Dragon Puncher, and that's pretty good stuff. And I suggested Bone, but it feels like suggesting Bone as a book that a kid should be able to read feels kind of like saying, oh, yes, Watchmen's still a complete, like, Watchmen's the pinnacle of comics, even though it happened 20 or 30 years ago. It feels like we must have come further.
Oh, my goodness. The Superman family book by the, oh, my goodness, the brothers whose names escape me now.
Mario and...
No. Mario and Luigi.
Mario and Luigi.
No, they're not real. They're not real people. Balthazar...
Oh, Balthazar Getty?
Possibly.
No, I think that's an actor. I honestly don't know who you're talking about. Art Balthazar.
Oh, but that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
The recent Superman family stories they did, they were very lovely.
Thor the Mighty.
Any of the Kaboom books.
Yeah.
So,
Adventure Time, I suggested, and Adventure she thinks Time. She's going to go for that.
But Garfield's lovely. Peanuts is lovely. Sergio Aragonese's work is very lovely on Kaboom. You've got Snarked.
Snarked is pretty good.
Yeah, the Muppets.
The Muppets are pretty good.
There is quite a lot.
I wish she'd asked a group of people that included you instead of a group of people that included me.
Mm. We could pass on the suggestions and pretend they're yours.
Yeah, I would do that.
I mean, Garfield and Peanuts, so it was quite easy to sort of dismiss them, but they're tried and tested stories. Garfield especially has been written by the excellent Mark Ovania.
What the hell was going on in that?
Talking of which,
Garfield comic.
God knows. You've got Gru.
Gru is a wanderer. He's pretty good.
Gru is absolutely... Do you know what, actually, thinking about it, for a seven-year-old boy, I think I'd probably put Gru at the top of my list.
Is Usagi Yojimbo too violent?
Maybe. I haven't read it, so no. I don't know. It just sounds violent to me.
I think it is probably too violent. Yeah, these are all good suggestions. Mm. Jane? You're just kind of happy with those ones.
Yeah, they're good.
Hilda's a good one.
And what about the Silver Age Essential volumes?
No, I think we should try and get him to read something good. Listener, if you can suggest any more, just pop them in the comments to this or at us at Mom Comics or on Facebook or somewhere. And I will try and endeavour to pass them on. What will actually happen is you'll do it because you're lovely. And then I'll try to do it, and then I'll forget. That's what normally happens.
I was really... The way the books go in and out of print annoys me. I was trying to convince my nephew's father to pick up a book, and I know that there's one book I know I can pretty much guarantee he'd really like, and that was Punisher Born.
Mm-hmm.
It's got bit of Vietnam War in there. It's got a bit of violence, but he kind of likes the Punisher as well. I know he'd love it. Can you get it at the moment for love? Can you? Bollocks.
Can you diddly?
And he's not going to, before you say Comixology, he's not going to read a book on the internet.
Why would he? No. Why would anybody?
I was very disappointed. It'd have been good to get him into comic books.
Do we have any more awkward middle bit stuff?
I have something from the awkward middle part.
Well, good.
The awkward middle part.
Yeah, because it was an awkward conversation about comics, and it was a personal, not tragedy, personal...
Trauma.
Yeah, maybe.
Travail. Experience. No. French.
Experience.
Doesn't start with a T, are you idiot? Personal travel.
Experience.
I'll just get straight to it.
I think that boat sailed
5 minutes ago.
So, my brother, as you know, or may not know, is reading comics, but I only pick them up in graphic novel form, which is fine. I can try and get him to do it in floppies, but he'll only go for the graphic novel. Anyways, we've kind of exhausted a bit of a list, so he's looking to figure out what he's going to read next. And I recommended Sex Criminals.
Oh.
Yes.
But he's not interested in floppies.
Nor the Sex Criminals, are they?
No, that's true.
It'd be right up the street. But I had to explain to him what it was about.
Why? That's the part of the fun. Doesn't he trust you?
No, he does trust me. But he just said, what's... Because he said, sex, you know, your sister's saying, try Sex Criminals. And then, oh, okay, so what's that about? And I say, it's about two people that stop time and they have sex. And I had to say, I know what you're thinking, but it's really good.
It's about a man and woman who love each other very much and realise that they can use their unique abilities to commit legitimate crimes. That's fine.
I didn't tell him about the sex shops or anything like that. I'll let him find out on his own.
Well, it sounds like he's either terrified of it or he probably feels a bit weird about really being interested in it by now.
But I instantly felt a bit weird recommending it to him. Like, oh, I'm talking about a book where there's a lot of sex in it and I'm saying my brother should read it.
I don't think there's as much sex in it as we think. I think it's quite disappointing how little sex there is in it
later. I got him onto Saga and there was the whole thing about the gay porn sex scene that really wasn't nothing.
What apparently John didn't see.
Yeah.
You have to look quite close.
No, you don't. There's a bloody picture of a man putting another man's penis in his mouth right there on the page. If you don't see it, then you're not looking at your comic properly.
Yeah, then there's something wrong with you.
Self-diagnosing.
Well, it worries me that he can see, like, you know, Superman punching a man in the mush, but he can't see a man doing a nice thing to another man.
Doing a nice... Okay, well, yeah.
Sucking someone's willy is a nice thing, isn't it? It's a pleasant thing to have happen to you, isn't it?
Yes.
So, I haven't yet...
Well, it depends, actually.
I haven't yet.
I used to think that any occasion that it was happening was a good thing, but then later I learned that there actually is such a thing as it being a good thing and such a thing as it not being a good thing.
Well, I haven't yet had one that I wasn't grateful for, Nick. And okay. I think if you've been ungrateful, then you need to think about your
not
life.
Not actually at the time. I retrospectively realised that sometimes it was better than other times.
So I was going to recommend this episode to my brother. I don't think...
No, you can definitely recommend it.
Yeah, no,
I'm sure
I like
be fine.
The bit where we expose how weird your relationship with him is. Ooh. And maybe we could get Amy to do some analysis.
Oh,
of...
my relationship with my brother's not weird. We've established
okay, then.
That.
You've self-diagnosed non-weirdness.
Well, when you said, why are you going to send him sweets? That's really weird. And then I had to put it into context for you.
Well, that I might like to send sweets to my daughter.
To
this has got very awkward.
Told you it was awkward. And it's about comics, and it was in the middle.
Are we ready for James' spotlight?
Give me 10, man.
Yeah, let's do it. Did I purchase that for you? I did. That was a birthday present.
It is a birthday present. I've basically exhausted. This is now exhausting the last of my new comics. So I'm back to the library on Saturday.
Yay. The library's good, though. Libraries are good for you.
They're going to be so pissed off I haven't brought Modesty Blaze back.
Oh.
I renewed it online, which was a wonderful experience. I think I tweeted about it at the time. I have in front of me Transmetropolitan 10, one more time, which is the final trade of the Transmetropolitan series. I'd not read the final books in the series, so it was nice to round off the story of Spider Jerusalem, the gonzo journalist who's forced back to the city to complete a book deal. And starts to fall into the politics of a character called the Smiler, Callahan he's called, and whilst he might appear to be a good guy on the surface, Spider uncovers the true nature of Callahan's nature, and the two of them enter into a battle of words and actions desperate, Spider Jerusalem's desperate to expose this man to the public at large and bring down this power-hungry madman. The series reaches a denouement in this series, in this book, sorry, where you can read it for yourself if you want to know exactly what happens. It's all very gripping and all very exciting. Mm-hmm. I didn't enjoy the final few stories as much as I've enjoyed Transmet as a whole. It's a tough story to round off, I think,
yes.
Because what's appealing about Transmetropolitan is this Hunter S. Thompson of the future and watching him interact with a world that he's so at odds with and watching him dissect our modern life through this sort of future shock that he's part of. It's all very... Unfortunately, it kind of is of its time, I think. It feels... Transmet does feel a little dated mm-hmm. because it was holding a mirror up to the late 90s. And we don't live in the late 90s anymore. I know that's a shock to you people.
Yes.
But when the book was at its best, it wasn't... The bigger story is great, but it's... The politics, I think, are very much on the nose. Maybe it reflects the anger of a time and an age as mm-hmm. well. I first started reading this after it had finished, but I started reading this back when I'd first started getting into comic books again, back in my early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was picking up floppies here and there. I was trying to collect it, which was stupid, and started slowly collecting the trades. It's taken me an age to get to this final trade. And I still had a bit of that sort of angry young man political spunk about me that I kind of idealised Spider Jerusalem to start with. And now I think maybe less so. I think he's still a very cool character, but the politics just feel a little bit overblown to me in this. And kind of he's almost... He's kind of a black and white, not a black and white character, but he creates a black and white world around him.
Yeah.
You know, he creates a very binary where this president is so evil and overblown that I start to get a bit weirded out by the satire that lies underneath it, because no one really is, even Nixon... wasn't that truly evil. It's, you know, the real world that the real politicians inhabit is kind of shades of grey. They need mirrors held up to them and they need to be held to account by politicians. I don't know, maybe there's an awful lot of... I know more about... I don't know.
It's very difficult because the time it was written in, it almost could have only been written by a British creator looking at British and American mm-hmm. politics, because it predates Obama. By some way,
a hell of a long way. Well, I mean, it ended a year after the World Trade Center attacks.
Yeah, it's very clearly about the two main politicians in it. One of them's very clearly Tony Blair. The other one's very clearly a Bush, probably. Yeah, a Bush, part of that sort of Republican.
He's a Republican analog, but he was pre George Jr.
But post
George Senior.
He's
a Republican analog, I think, rather than.
But he's largely seen as feckless, like he's a monster.
The beast.
Yeah, he's a monster, but he's fairly he's fairly useless.
Mm.
The character who's really dangerous, the one who presents as a smiler but is actually completely psychotic, is almost someone, although it's all transposed onto American politics, it all takes place in this future version of America. It's very clearly we thought we were probably getting a decent politician, and he turned out to be a monster. And that's sort of something that will have really resonated with audiences in maybe audiences reading it in the US now, who thought that everything was going to be perfect once they got a hopeful politician in. But it's turned out that actually life's more complicated than that. That they're almost living that, or they were certainly living that a few years ago, that feeling that
you're quite right, and I think that's in terms of the way I engage with it. At the time, when I first started reading it, I was very happy and sort of felt disenfranchised by New Labour, so maybe I could sort of understand that, whereas we live in a very different world where that actually seems like a very faded memory at this point. But I think that's the point, and I was going to kind of... What I want to say is, and I still love Transmits for Honor. I still think it's wonderfully written, wonderfully realised, looks beautiful. The world is so real. You know, it's sort of, it still works as punk rock satire, I think, absolutely. But, you know, maybe the times have changed too much. But it's quite interesting that sort of two of the books that first hooked me back in, two books from the 90s that first hooked me back in, was this one. I've just started rereading Preacher. And I've just read the first three editions of the new reprinted collected editions. They're collecting 12 at a time rather than traditional six. And what I found remarkable about Preacher is, although it's not quite as maybe shocking as the first read in terms of the ick factor, it holds up beautifully and actually doesn't feel like it's aged that much at all to me.
I think that's probably about right. And I think what that is Garth Ennis comics are very much about the past, whereas Warren Ellis comics, especially Transmetropolitan, are about the immediate bleeding edge of now and the immediate future. Mm-hmm. And so one's going to stay like relevant for a lot longer because you're wrong about a lot of things that you suggested. So like it's almost exactly right about... It pretty much sums up how we feel about Tony Blair, but we've since come to realise that the real nature of institutional psychosis and social injustice, and the nature of that sort of evil is much more established and institutional and mundane.
Yeah.
Whereas the characters in that are very broad. We come to sort of understand that for the most part. Characters aren't those big, it's not that easy to pin a face on what's wrong with the world, but that's what he's doing the whole way through that book. It's like if Spider can just expose these people, then everything will be
okay. I think that's why these final few stories kind of don't feel as satisfying as earlier on, because it is that, and it's all right. It starts to feel too overblown at that point. I think maybe, which is, I sound like I'm being really negative about it. I do genuinely love Transmet. I think it's great. I do think it's a classic. And the stuff that actually Ellis gets absolutely on the nose, obviously he goes back to work for an old journalist friend of his who runs a newspaper. It's a news feed called The Word. The increasing power of small publisher or internet published information, he was bang on. 1997, he was talking about that. And I think he was just about on the money in terms of where we're going. You know, he had a lot of the vision he had in terms of how the future was going to go, how we connect, how we augment and so forth. Yeah, a lot of stuff that was either plausible or has come to pass. So it's interesting. It's, if you've not read Transmet, I think you probably should. But it's weird. I found how I reacted to this really took me aback. Nice, by the way, beautiful, obviously, always beautiful Derek Robinson art. But this is a lovely edition that sort of collects the last few issues of Transmet, and then a couple of the specials. I Hate It Here, and I forget what the other one was called. But they're Filth of the City.
Yeah.
And they're basically just a series of
Prose pieces?
Prose pieces. Yeah. It's basically a Spider Jerusalem news piece, but each page is illustrated by a different artist. So they're absolutely stunning, beautiful, and it's lovely to sort of get a longer piece of narrative from Spider as well. So it's a beautiful edition.
Pretty gorgeous. And all the covers are in the back as well. So those are great. The covers were great in that series.
I think, like I said, it's just to sort of summarise, though, and the way I felt about it, it's definitely an angry young man's book or an angry young person's book. It's weird. The way I felt about it, I hope this doesn't make me a psychopath. I really like Catcher in the Rye.
Mm-hmm.
I first read it when I was 13, and I really idolised Holden Caulfield when I was 13. And then I read it in my early 20s, and I thought he was a bit of a prick.
Mm.
And kind of, I think, to where I've come as a human being, I don't look up to Spider in the way that I did when I first started reading it in my 30s. It's quite interesting. It's sort of, it's one of those books. It's very much where you stand politically, maybe the age you are and so forth. You will definitely engage with it in a very different way.
There are certain things, I think there are certain things that you're supposed to grow out of.
Maybe.
To a certain extent. And it's like, there's a point at which you realise that maybe Batman's just beating up poor people who are driven to crime a lot of the time.
Oh, don't.
You know what I mean?
I don't want to think about it.
It's that sort of thing. And it's... Yeah, and do you know, the other thing is, though, Warren Ellis writes in a certain sort of way that still really appeals to me.
Oh, yeah.
But that an awful lot of people since have also started writing in. That voice isn't as rare a gift or whatever as it was once.
And that diminishes the impact, I think, a little bit.
It's interesting, though. I might have to reread Transmet as well. Thanks, James.
That's all right.
Yeah, thank you. I'm looking forward to borrowing these all from you.
It's good stuff. I think it's really good stuff. It's like the Filthy Assistant are an interesting thing as well. It's difficult to think of them as particularly empowering or, you know, we've talked about whether or not strong is the right way to refer to female characters, but the only real around Spider Jerusalem.
Yeah, they are strong, but no one has
agency.
They live to serve the main male protagonist.
Yeah. So I don't know. Anyway, that's interesting. I really need to reread Transmet. That sounds interesting. Excellent. Thanks, James. What's everyone doing for the rest of their weeks?
It's Eurovision, so I'm all about Eurovision now.
Yeah, Eurovision this weekend.
In fact, I want to rush home and watch the semi-finals, which I know is disgusting, Jane, a great deal.
I know, he's spoiling it for himself.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I love Eurovision.
Oh, cool. So my week is basically realising that this is what we've come to. Probably having a nice warm bath with a razor and a big bottle of wine. That's not true. I'm not going to kill myself over Eurovision. There have been like 40 years of trauma beforehand I could blame it on if I was going to.
I told my mum what we were saying, you know, because Jane and life partner Steve, hopefully Steve as well, are going to come over and watch it with us.
Are you going to be talking through it?
Yeah,
or going out into the kitchen?
Yeah, definitely.
Boring songs. You do your score, you write your comment, and then you go.
Eurovision is built for snarky comment while you're watching it.
No, Eurovision is basically the whole point of it.
Yeah, it's a party show. It's not for sitting there like solemn arseholes.
Our friends who we were accidentally watching it in the background with when we visited their house last year are going to be here at our house this weekend. That's weird timing.
It is.
Huh, okay.
Thanks for that. So I said to my mother, she took the mickey out of me for watching Eurovision.
Da 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 da.
And I said to her, well, whether it was on purpose, my mum and my dad always used to go out on Eurovision night. So they'd leave me with my gran. So me and my gran would watch Eurovision. So it started to be something that I had with my gran. It was a connection I had with her. So it became really special to me. I was telling her, and she's like, oh.
Da-da-da-da-da.
She had nothing for me. It was hilarious. I don't know why I shared that story with you at this point.
I thought it was going to be a lovely. Setup for a blues song, which is why I did the da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah,
but it felt a lot more
charming at the time. I think
it is charming.
No,
you love Eurovision because of a charming, lovely past connection with a beloved family member. I'm assuming She looms large as a nice figure in your past, yeah. Not
she,
as a horrific
she was
one.
Lovely, yeah. No, she was very okay. Nice.
Okay, you like football?
Dead now, though.
Nick. Yeah, okay.
Although, to be
we
fair,
all are eventually.
Had she lived, she'd be 110 next year. I mean, you know,
which would be a really good run.
Had she lived, she'd almost certainly be dead.
Yeah, that's true. And also, you like football because of a similar family connection. I think it's lovely.
It's the World Cup in about a month. I am really going to be scooting through these once the World Cup starts.
I mean, I don't have to give a shit about this stuff, but it's nice that you do.
I'm going to phone it in for the World Cup. To be honest with you, I might just do 2 to 5 minute audio contributions to during the World Cup, so I don't miss anything.
But they're not allowed to be about football.
I'm sure people won't notice.
Am I allowed to bring my iPad so I can stream the games while we're recording? Oh,
no.
But the World Cup though. The
no,
World
that's
Cup.
Fine. Just book it off.
God, I love the World Cup.
Do you? Do you like football?
I
haven't got
Cup.
That particular part of your
well,
character.
Well, no, I like Saints and I like the World Cup.
Okay.
Oh, I'm going to football on Sunday as well.
Jane, Eurovision. James, Eurovision.
Football on Sunday,
too. I'm not going to be watching Eurovision. We've got friends over. And I think that's us done. Thank you, listener. As always, you are a delight, a lovely, lovely delight, and part of an elite club. Group
that's free to join.
That's free to join, and free to tell all your friends about if you think they're cool enough.
We've got a special code. It's called "Tell Everyone."
Yes, you don't get anything if you use that anywhere.
But it's part of the members only free to join club that we have.
Yep. One cost, no price. Good luck to Molly. Up the Saints.
Okay, I don't know what that means.
Thank you, listener.
Thank you, listener. You're awesome. Thank you, guys. You're awesome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.